tell me about your father.
City Counselling on 95BFM, our weekly chat with the good people of Auckland Council.
You're listening to The Wire. This morning I spoke to Pippa Coombe, the Auckland Councillor for Waitemata and the Gulf Ward. We discussed the recent protest taking place around the Waiheke Island Marina, where protesters claim developments will harm nesting penguins and have attempted to stop the developers. We also spoke about Auckland Transport's goals for climate sustainability and the proposed $685 million cycleway across the Harbour Bridge. I started by asking Pippa her thoughts on the recent protests and conflict around the Waiheke Marina.
It was really distressing and disturbing to see the scenes at Putiki Bay, especially over the last week, where you've got protectors and protesters who are trying to stop the marina and restore the bay, being very roughly handled, and there's been some serious injuries. So it's just, you know, a situation that has really escalated. It's good news to hear that the construction's been halted, as far as I know, at least until Monday. But what I've been really pushing for, along with the chair of the local board, is that the construction stops altogether until we have a penguin management plan, because one of the issues there is about the habitat of the korora. But there are a multitude of issues, but it would really help, I think, de-escalate the situation if the construction was worse.
Did the Supreme Court not rule in favour of the construction company? Do you think it's justifiable of protesters to go against it?
Well, the construction company, Kennedy Point Marina, do have a lawful resource consent that has been through multiple court cases. So it is lawful. There is nothing council can do to overturn that, and nothing I can do in my role. But I just think the approach to the construction and the people that they're using for security, and the fact that a fire or korora have been found in burrows and the impact on the bay, I just think that needs to be all kind of re-looked at. There needs to be a bit of a reset. And also just about the design of the marina, if it can fit more lightly on the bay, I think that would be a good outcome. I mean, I totally acknowledge, you know, that some of the protesters and protectors who are there would want to see the marina stopped altogether. And that is in the power of Parliament, but I would say that's very unlikely going to happen. So it's about being able to find a compromise, I think, and also just ensuring that no one is hurt as well.
You say there's nothing you can do in your role currently. Do you think that's an issue? As a representative, would you like to be able to do more?
Well, what I can do, I mean, just to clarify, in my role I can be following up on, say, for example, to ensure that all the compliance conditions are being met under the current resource consent, but I can't overturn a lawful resource consent. That's not within my power. But the bigger issue, and something that is what I'm advocating for, is that there needs to be changes to the Resource Management Act. I mean, that's the bigger picture, that it should never be a location where a marina could be consented. And also something that council have control of is the fact that it's consented, and then the fees for being located in a bay are minimal. So you can basically occupy the commons for a nominal amount for 35 years. So I think there's big systemic issues that need to be addressed.
Are you confident that the RMA will be reformed in a useful way, in a more constructive way, so that this sort of situation doesn't pop up again?
Well, we're exactly at that point where Minister Parker is working on the reforms to the RMA, so I think that's a positive sign, and it's also what I'm looking at as co-chair of the Hauraki Gulf Forum as well. So we really want to have the broader input into the impact of marinas in the coastal environment and the process for resource consent.
More generally, thinking about the council and the government and how they work together, do you think the interaction between local government and national government is useful in serving environmental justice and protecting environmental causes?
Well, another example, I guess, where it hasn't been very useful is government removing the general tree protection rule. So we're seeing a lot of trees, mature trees on private property are being cut down because there's no more protection of those trees. So they used to have to get a resource consent to be able to cut them down. So that's been a big issue. And local government does need more powers, I think, in terms of over the marine environment as well as on land, particularly seeing that around marine protection, where we've had some good news about increasing marine protection, but it still only takes it to about 5% of the Hauraki Gulf.
Last week I spoke to Shane Shane Henderson a little bit about Auckland's transport and climate change. Do you think the council's doing enough right now?
Well, we have a climate plan called Te Tariki a Tawhiri. That's Auckland's climate plan, and that got some really bold actions in it, and also a very ambitious emissions reduction target of reducing our emissions by 50% by 2030. So we absolutely have to move all the levers possible and act on climate. You know, council's only part of the picture. We've really got to do that in conjunction with business, community, iwi, and of course, you know, government. At the moment, this, you know, we've kind of got to do a massive transformation and redirection of what we're doing, reprioritisation, particularly in transport. So I think there's heaps more we have to do, particularly around the mode shift, getting people onto active transport, reducing the amount of car use, and we're only really just starting out on that pathway.
Do you think the council's doing enough to increase spending or like increase the fleet of public transport?
So we've just, well, the Auckland Transport Board have just signed off the Regional Land Transport Plan, which has the biggest investment in public transport ever. It's going to increase, I think, buses are going to have 50% of buses will be electric by 2025. There's lots of good news in there and lots of investment in public transport infrastructure, but we do need more investment from government to really make that transformational shift.
I've seen a lot of criticism around Auckland transport saying that while there are increases in public transport, often they're just matching population growth rather than actually increasing sort of in significant ways percentage-wise. Do you think that's a reasonable criticism?
There's always more that needs to be done to improve services and make it an attractive way to get around. I mean, part of the issue is that the buses are actually operated by private companies, so we need to get them to lift the standard of pay and the working conditions would make a difference, you know, to ensure there aren't cancellations and bus drivers know where stops are. And we've got to set too ambitious targets, because there is, like you say, there's no point just having tracking against population growth. We've actually got to have a total mode shift.
And finally, so the proposed Harbour Bridge site away from a couple of weeks ago got a lot of controversy. Do you think the proposed $685 million was a good use of money?
Julianne Genta has said, you know, this is the cost of not taking a lane on that current bridge. This is the cost of driving and retaining the current levels of driving. So I think we've got to have that connection, and this is the price tag for that. And I know it seems like a big number, but you know, we can't have an incomplete network. My preference would be that we did take a lane and that we introduce road pricing to sort of ease the congestion. But you know, in the current climate, I think to push ahead with the bridge is the right thing to do. And when you look at it overall with the transport budget, there's still only something like 4% is being invested in walking and cycling, even if you take into account the bridge.
There was some significant bus routes which got pushed back a bit at the same time that the money was being proposed for the cycleway. Just in terms of numbers, like people using a cycleway compared to people using buses, do you think cycleways are still important to look at, even if they aren't impacting a huge number of people?
Well, we've got to look at the potential numbers that would use cycleways if they existed. The problem is it's no point kind of counting who's cycling now, because there isn't a safe network. The same with trying to count the number of cars that were going over the harbour before there was a bridge. But we have the potential, you know, to set a really ambitious target for how many people we want cycling, but we've got to give them a safe, connected network. And we'll see, just like in other cities that have done that, you know, we will get those huge gains. And we, you know, even if we were just aiming for 7% of people cycling to work and school every day, that's, you know, not a massive amount, and it's big for Auckland, but we can only do that if we invest.
That was The Wire.
That was The Wire. All for the Friday Wire today. Thanks to Christopher Luxon, Professor Sean Hendy, Dr. Kiara Kremen, Dr. Debashis Bondapati, and Pippa Coombe for chatting to us. And a big thank you to Emily for her work today. Remember, you can re-listen to all these stories and the whole show on the 95BFM website. Up next is Land of the Good Groove with Murray Kimmock. Mā te wā.
Land of the Good Groove on 95BFM.
then brought it to the street so we can share it with each other.
It's Positive Force with We Got the Funk, and started with the other side of the record, Lover's Holiday, Change. And in the middle was Bootsy from Bootsy Collins from 2017. I think not all dates start with 19. 2017, and a song called Pushman, obviously not Curtis Mayfield's song. Guests included Drew Down, Buck Seeds, and Mr. Talkbox. Anyway, Bootsy Collins, this rather good album. His recent albums have all been rather interesting. And he's always worn a mask for years, so no one can really see his age because the eyes tell you. Anyway, let's get on with things.
Land of the Good Groove on 95 BFM.
Hey, what's a seven-letter word for Street Fighter?
What? No idea.
Okay, what about...